taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Will America become a socialist nation? Now, yes, there are those out there that very much want to make America a socialist, a collectivist nation, while there are others who stand steadfastly against it. But which side are you on? Now, forget the rhetoric, forget the talking points. I believe there is a simple way to be sure, and it's to answer this question. Do the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one? You see, there's right now a tug of war going between these two socioeconomic theories, ideas, collectivism versus individuality. We use lots of different terms, socialism, communism, Marxism, Maoism, versus capitalism and democracy and freedom. We're dealing with a question of, is the collective more important or is the individual more important? Do you have rights because of a group that you're a part of or simply because you are an individual? See, that's the tug of war we're dealing with. Now, will the American people trade the birthright of freedom and liberty for this mythical utopia of collectivism that is always promised but never delivered? Ladies and gentlemen, that's what I want to talk about today, right here on the Constitution Study. My name is Paul Engel. I am glad you could join me today as we delve into this question of America's future and what we can do to decide what America looks like in the coming generations. Now, there's a couple interesting things. You probably know which side I fall on. If you've listened to the Constitution Study for any length of time, you know I believe in individualism and individual rights and individual responsibility. So that shouldn't be too hard a stretch. But let's look at the examples when you talk about collectivism. See, the thing about collectivism is it makes a lot of promises that it never actually fulfills. The utopia that we're promised, if we simply, you know, give up all of our individuality and become cogs in the machine or bricks in a wall and we just do whatever is best for the collective, that everybody will be fine, never seems to be fulfilled. But to me, there's actually a more important measure of why I believe in individuality over collectivism. And the answer comes from a little bit of history, a little bit of common sense, and just simple observation. You see, while there are a lot of people that voluntarily join collectivist groups, they never seem to get very big without the use of force. Think of it. Think of all the collectivist nations, the Soviet Union, China, communist Vietnam, Cuba, Venezuela, all of these nations that believe in collectivism or are organized around this socialist, communist environment always must put their policies in place by force. In other words, they don't say, hey, come look at how great things are, and people naturally flock to them. No. They often have to build walls to keep people from fleeing from them. And if that isn't the perfect example of which socioeconomic system we should be striving for, I don't know what is. So when we talk about collectivism, understand there will always be a group of people who enforce their will, their idea of what's the best for society on others, and they do so by force. Well, take, for example, the recent issues with the FBI and parents who disagreed, who protested against what their children were being taught in schools. You see, the House Judiciary Committee sent a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland accusing him of lying under oath and claiming that the Federal Bureau of Investigation is monitoring parents who've been protesting at school board meetings. He said, Paul, what does this have to do with collectivism versus individuality, with socialism? Very simple. You see, public schools are government-run schools. And when people disagree, when parents disagreed with when they protested what was being taught to their children, government came down. Now, there's evidence that the FBI started monitoring these parents. It's not simply a question of, you know, freedom to peaceably assemble. You can peacefully protest, absolutely. But notice, it wasn't a question of, well, these parents are committing crimes. If they were committing crimes, they'd have been state and local crimes. But there were no charges filed against them. And it went to the federal government, the collectivist government. See, if there's a problem at the school board meetings, again, that should be dealt with state and local. The federal government has no power delegated to regulate education, to regulate demonstration, unless there is an actual insurrection, and there wasn't. But the very idea that not only the school boards, but this National School Board Association sought the federal government to suppress ideas that were contradictory to what the schools were teaching is a classic example of the use of force by collectivists. If you don't agree with what we believe is best for everybody, then we will use force to suppress what you're saying. See, there are in Arizona, there are three parents. They filed lawsuits against the Scottsdale Unified School District, saying the school district kept a dossier on them in an attempt to silence their criticism of district policies. Now, here's the point I want to make. By the way, if the school district is suppressing dissenting views, that's wrong. But notice how in Arizona, they dealt with it apparently at the state level. In Virginia and others, they went to the feds. Remember, it was Loudoun County, Virginia, that was causing all the brouhaha that led to the National Association of School Boards to send the letter to Attorney General Garland to get the opponents suppressed. See, every time you see a collectivist environment, you see suppression of information, you see censorship, because they say, we know what is best for everyone else. It's the ultimate narcissism that any one person or any group of people can know what is best for everyone else. But that is the bread and butter. That's the basis of all collectivist systems. That the individual subjugate their opinion of what is best for what the collective thinks is best. So when we see all of these instances of censorship, of suppression of contradictory ideas, that is collectivism doing what collectivist does. It's like saying, oh, fish swim, and collectivists censor. Most birds fly, and collectivists tell other people how to live their life. It is the nature of the beast, in other words. So when a group of congressmen and women pressure YouTube to censor Spanish language content that they deem as disinformation, well, that's exactly what collectivists do. So no one should be surprised when I say that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, a group of all Democrats, held a meeting with the YouTube CEO to discuss the urgency of addressing Spanish language disinformation and misinformation, content moderation, and YouTube's initiatives and policies addressing them. No one should be surprised that these are all Democrats. You see, like so much in politics, you don't pay attention to the words, you pay attention to the deeds. See, the interesting thing about the Democratic Party, at least the leadership, the National Democratic Party and the leadership, not the necessarily the rank and file members or even the state and county Democratic committees, but as a whole, at the national level, at the leadership level, they believe in collectivism. They're socialists, they're communists, they're Marxists. Again, not all of them, but as a whole, that is the direction that they go. So I'm not surprised that Democrats, and again, I have no love for the Republicans either. I agree with Washington. The dissension that is natural to party politics is its own frightful despotism. But it's interesting that it's a Democratic caucus, a caucus made up entirely of Democratic congressmen that are discussing censoring information they don't like. They call it disinformation or misinformation. Let's face it, it's information they do not like. This idea that this is factually wrong has nothing to do with this discussion. They're not looking for information that's factually wrong. They're looking at information that is not advantageous for them. And they want it censored because that's what collectivists do. Collectivists don't believe you have the right to speak information that they don't appreciate, to hear information that they don't want you to hear. They want to control your lives. Now, sure, there's a lot of people say, well, that's wonderful. I don't want to have to think about this. I don't want to have to decide. I want someone to spoon feed me exactly what I need to know so I don't have to worry about it. We call them subjects. I call them slaves. I call them children. See, the problem with collectivism is it sounds easy. You don't have to figure out which program. You don't have to analyze a news program and decide, well, what information is good, what information. You don't have to do that. Someone else makes all the decisions for you. But that means you don't have the ability to decide for yourself anymore, do you? So when the attorneys general of Missouri and Louisiana sue the Biden administration for pressuring and colluding big tech companies to censor free speech, we shouldn't be surprised. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans wouldn't do the same thing. The Republicans have their idea of disinformation and misinformation, and they try to persuade people one way or another. But it's the collective idea that everything must be dealt with in Washington, that all this power coalesces in Washington. As Lord Acton said, power corrupts, absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. So I'm not surprised to see, and we've seen it, right? Jen Psaki saying that, well, we pick out disinformation and we pass it on to Facebook to get it pulled down. And, you know, by the way, if you get banned from Facebook, you should be banned from everyone. Well, forget about the rule of law. Forget about the First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech and freedom of the press. They don't care. Because in their minds, they know best. So this is the future you have chosen. Now, let's set aside for a minute the obvious problems of the 2020 election. The fact that at least five states illegally appointed presidential electors, the evidence of fraud in multiple states. Let's put that on the back burner for the moment. Not just the president, but half of the Senate, more than half of the House, people chose representatives that are aligned for collectivism, taking care of you rather than protecting, rather than allowing you to be free. They want people to protect them rather than to protect their rights. This is what America's future looks like. This is the path that we have chosen, and we are going straight towards it. The question is, will the American people change their mind? Will we change course? Will we look back to our history and say, no, I want to live free. I know it's messy. I know it's difficult. I know I have to deal with things I don't like. I have to allow people to disagree with me. But it's worth it to be free. That's the decision that we're going to make in just a few months. Are we going to continue down the road towards socialism, collectivism, being ruled? Or are we going to turn towards individuality, freedom, and liberty? Now, I do have to take a break, but before I do, I want to remind you of a couple things. You can find out more about the Constitution Study. You can support the work that we're doing here by going to constitutionstudy.com. I am still putting on a tour this summer. I'm still looking for tour dates. So if you'd like to find out more about the Blessings of Liberty Tour, just head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. I'm still updating the page, but you can get a gist of what's going on. I'm still trying to solidify a couple dates. You can request that I come to speak to your group or at your event. Just fill out the form at the bottom, and I'll be more than happy to contact you to see if we can make that happen. Also, I'm still putting on my online study. So if you want to join a group of us that meets every other Monday on Zoom, Monday evening at 7 p.m. Central Time, we read, we study, we discuss, we debate the Constitution of the United States. We'll find out more. Go to constitutionstudy.com/study. You can get the first three sessions that we did absolutely free. We recorded them. We covered the Bill of Rights. Check it out. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/study. Lastly, please head to healthycell.com. You know, they've got a bunch of these wonderful pill-free, travel-ready gel packs to help keep you healthy and help keep you safe. For example, I love to use a Focus and Recall. You get to the end of the day and the mind gets fuzzy and you're trying to figure out, you know, you're just having a hard time concentrating. I take a packet of Focus and Recall. It does just that. It helps me focus on what I've got to do. It helps my long-term brain power, and it's easy to use and easy to take. So again, head to healthycell.com. Use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's right. You go to healthycell.com, put together any order you want, use that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud, and they will give you 20% off your first order.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoin the Constitution Study, and today we're looking at America's future and asking, is it socialist or not? Now, one of the common aspects of these collectivist societies is often the superiority of politics over the law. For example, you may be familiar with Title IX regulations. These are, again, well, all right, they're void, they're criminal, right? Because they involve education, which is not a power delegated to the United States to regulate education. But the federal government still spends billions of dollars in federally funded schools in direct violation of the Constitution of the United States. And under Barack Obama, the Office of Civil Rights kind of rewrote the rules. Remember, Congress has the power to legislate, not the executive. But you see, they rewrote the rules to basically say that if you were accused of certain types of assault, well, you were guilty until proven innocent. Again, in direct violation of the laws and the supreme law of the land. Now, when Trump was in office, he rewrote some of those rules. Well, Biden's back in office, so once again, the politics is at it again, and it looks like the Biden administration is planning on rolling back those protections that say you're innocent until proven guilty. That the very idea that you can say something without being charged with a crime even is under attack because, he said something that offended me, and voila, we have examples of these laws being used to intimidate others. Now, I don't believe people, believe people should be assaulted. I want people treated fairly. But one of the things we see a lot in these types of countries, these collectivist countries, is the politics, the party politics, the party itself becomes superior to the law. So when we find out that the FBI is trying to fire agents who attended the January 6th rally, we really shouldn't be surprised. See, according to some House lawmakers, whistleblowers have come forward and alleged that the FBI is trying to terminate, to fire Bureau employees simply because they were at the rally on January 6th. They're not charged with entering the Capitol. In fact, they haven't been charged with any crime at all. But allegedly, according to a Twitter post, whistleblowers say they are still trying, the FBI is trying to fire them. See, politics superseding law. It's one of the reasons why I think understanding this is so important. You see, the Declaration of Independence says that we create governments to protect our rights, not to protect us. But what happens when governments use politics as their standard rather than the law and rather than your rights? Now, this has been done by both primary parties, right? The Democrats and the Republicans. But it seems like, and again, I'm not partisan, but this seems to happen a lot more often under Democratic administrations than it does under Republican ones. I'm not saying it doesn't happen under Republicans. I'm saying it seems to happen more often. Which brings an interesting question. If these leaders, if these representatives, if the people who oversee the FBI, because remember, the FBI is part of the executive branch. If the same people who are saying, if you went to the January 6th rally, you can be terminated, even though you're not even charged with committing a crime. If the rules need to be reorganized so that a mere accusation is enough to be considered guilty, and you have to prove your innocence, how safe are your rights? How protected are your rights when the government uses politics to decide a course of action, a policy, rather than the law? When those in control of the collective decide what is and isn't acceptable, not the people themselves. See, that's the thing about collectivism. You don't get to decide. Someone else decides for you. imagine living your life wondering if whatever you do, someday some person decides, you know what, we don't like that anymore. That's not politically, that's not best for the collective, so we're going to punish you for what you did. Now, I said before, there are people who want us to be a socialist country. And many of them, by the way, work in Congress. See, 18 members of Congress sent a letter to Joe Biden calling on him to repeal sanctions against Venezuela, specifically against the socialist regime in Venezuela headed by Nicolas Maduro. Now, in the letter, they agree that Maduro and his allies bear much responsibility for the humanitarian and political crisis in Venezuela, but they still want to reduce sanctions. I don't know. I guess they think maybe that Maduro is a petulant child and in response to the sanctions is beating up on his people. That somehow if we simply were nicer to the Maduro regime, well, then he'd be nicer to his people. And somehow they blame U.S. policy for how Maduro treats his people. I'm not sure. But here's the interesting thing. Here's what comes next. See, I'm sure by now you're quite familiar with the fact that gasoline prices are through the roof. Oil prices through the roof. Very hard in our economy. And what is the Biden administration's reaction to this? Do they say, you know what? Maybe we should open up more oil and gas drilling in the U.S. No, the Biden administration just stopped the sale of leases on over 1 million acres in Alaska. Now, he says because there was little interest. I don't trust a word that he says. We've been lied to by this administration since before it was an administration. But rather than trying to increase domestic production, the Biden administration plans on easing sanctions on Venezuela to provide more imports. Now, this is one of those, again, if the issue is the price of gasoline, why wouldn't you support American oil production? Why would you rather support the oil production of nations that are totalitarian? Is it because they are totalitarian? Because they are collectivists, and that's exactly what you want. I don't know. I can't read the mind of Mr. Biden, and even if I could, I don't think I want to. But once again, you see an administration supporting tyranny, oppression, collectivism over freedom and liberty. Now, I've picked on the Democrats quite a bit this program. So let's pick a little bit on the Republicans. Because remember, it was the Republicans that gave us the Patriot Act. It was the Republicans that gave us the Transportation Security Administration. It was the Republicans that gave us Guantanamo Bay. See, neither side's hands are clean. But the interesting thing about it is, look at how much time we spend focused on the collective interests of the party rather than the individual interests of the person. How often do you look for someone else to find a solution to your problem? How often do we look to government or political parties as our solution? See, that's just as much a collectivist idea as communism and socialism. If you're waiting for a government to fix your healthcare problem, your income problem, your food cost problem, if you're waiting for someone else to fix it, you're looking for a collectivist solution. So that's why I'm trying to move away from this idea of simply socialism and recognize it's a collectivist idea. One collectivist group wants socialism and communism, and another group wants the collectivist through, republicanism, through party loyalty. It's one of the reasons why people say, well, who do you support? I don't support people. I support policies. I support programs. And if you tell me that I have to support a person because, well, they're part of the right party, or because the other group will win, we're just dealing with collectivism. If the extent of my evaluation of a candidate is what political party they're a part of, then we're just as caught in collectivism as anyone else. See, Washington warned us of this collectivist idea. Now, he didn't use those terms, but look at what he said. He said, the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetuated the most hard enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. What are they saying? When your faction wins, you have a when you dominate, that spirit of revenge leads you to do things in support of your collective. And when your opponent faction wins, again, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, they act in support of their collective. See, when I talk about America becoming a socialist nation, it's not simply, are we going to be the next USSR or CCP? It is, why are we dedicated to this idea of collectivism, of political party? That spirit of revenge that is natural to the dissension of parties is its own frightful despotism. When we see people not as individuals, but as collectives, as groups, when we treat people based on the group we assign them to, that collectivist idea is its own frightful despotism. Whether that group be racially, socioeconomically, or politically organized. When we view people as a collective rather than as individuals, we can justify demeaning them. We can justify restricting their rights because they're other. They're someone else. I must shut down what they say because it's evil and harmful. I must not simply oppose the details of the program. I must oppose everything they say and do because they're other. It must be evil. The idea of collectivism, whether it be, regardless of the form, is in itself engenders hatred of others. We've seen it in the racial hatred, both under slavery, under Jim Crow, today under CRT. This idea of you must hate the other because of who they are, what they've, not because of who they are, but because of what their group has done. That's why I say a pox on both their houses. Neither party's hands are clean because both parties have put the needs of the party above the needs of the individual. The needs of the many in the party supersede the needs of the few or the one. When we've done that, when we can justify the trashing of people's rights because the needs of the many or the needs of the group are superior to them, freedom and liberty die. They've been dying and decaying in this country for decades. So when you think about socialism, don't think about left versus right. Don't think about progressive versus conservative. Don't think about Democrat versus Republican. All of those are examples of collectivism. Think about the people. Until we can see people as individuals with their own foibles and their own capabilities. Until we recognize the rights of the individual, America will continue down this direction of socialism because it is the most logical outcome of thinking as a collective, of seeing people in groups rather than as individuals. We call it prejudice. We call it discrimination. But it's amazing when it's justified because, well, that group is other. That group has done something to warrant the prejudice. That group has done something to warrant the discrimination. Not that the person did it. The group did it. Think about that as you think about the current dissension that we live with here in America. The state of social discourse. Even the willingness to listen to opposing points of view. To recognize that there's maybe somebody I vehemently disagree with, but not only will I defend to the death their right to disagree, but I will work with them on something we can agree on. That's the difference between individuality and collectivism. Now, I have to take another break, but before I do, I want to remind you, you can hear the Constitution Study weekdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Find our world-class media players or use our awesome apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can find them all on the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. Don't forget, these programs and all the America Out Loud programs go to podcast generally a few days after they're heard on the radio. Listen on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just do us a favor. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, give us a subscribe so that others can find this as well.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're looking at America's future and asking, is it socialist? Is it collectivist? It's interesting to note that the constitutions of most of the states recognize that all power is inherent in the people, that we delegate that power to governments to work for us, that we're a republic. No Webster defined a republic as a state in which the exercise of sovereign power is lodged in representatives elected by the people. The power is inherent in us. We delegate some of that power to government. We then elect representatives to be part of that government to exercise our power in our name, which means if we are going to be free, if we're going to live individualistically, and again, no person is an island. You can't be completely an individual. But if we're going to live with a recognition of individual rights, well, then we must have free, fair, and open elections. If we are to be a republic, if the American people are to choose our representatives, those elections must be as beyond reproach as possible. So when evidence surfaces that Mark Zuckerberg spent almost $500 million to influence the election in favor of the Democratic Party, then those elections aren't fair. How do we know that the representatives that were elected were done so by the people and not by these not by Mark Zuckerberg? Yes, he funneled almost $500 million into this organization that then spent that money to get out the vote in Democratic controlled, Democratic leading precincts and districts and counties. The data is clear. Some 95% of the money went to county boards of education in Democratic districts, not in Republican districts. So how free is your election? How free was your choice when there is evidence of media, both social and corporate, influencing what you are allowed to see, denying you the right to see that there was an issue with a laptop owned by Hunter Biden? When that was not only, when the New York Post broke the story, not only did the other media focus it, just simply call it Russian propaganda, social media spiked the story. But now as that information is coming out to be true, as there's more and more evidence that this is actually true, studies or polls say that 17% of Biden voters would have voted differently if they had known about the laptop. Are we a free republic when our elections are manipulated by billionaires and by media? What about the situation where the elections are just plain stolen? Have you heard about this, the movie from Dinesh D'Souza, 2000 Mules, where they have video evidence of people stuffing ballot drop boxes? He worked with a group, I think it's called True the Vote, and they collected, they purchased cell phone tracking data. And in hearing some of the interviews, I mean, this wasn't a fly-by-night operation. They looked at people that visited 10 or more drop boxes in a certain period of time. They have video evidence of them stuffing multiple ballots into the boxes in violation of state law. So when I say, you know, the American people chose this administration, there's an asterisk. There's a footnote that says, well, maybe we didn't. But if the American people didn't choose, the American people are still responsible. Because the American people hired the very state, county, and local governments that are supposed to police these, that are supposed to oversee the elections, that are supposed to make sure that the laws are followed. Meaning the people that took Zuckerberg's money worked for the people of those counties and districts. They hired corrupt people. They got corrupt outcomes. And I wonder how many of them are facing the loss of their job this election because of the evidence of their corruption. I wonder how many of these ballot stuffers are facing prosecution for what they have done. You see, we can't be a constitutional republic if our elections aren't trustworthy. Now, elections are never going to be perfect, right? We live in a fallen world. It's never going to be perfect. There's never going to be zero fraud. But the problem is, since we've spent decades not dealing with the problem when it was small, it is now a tremendous problem, and there is more and mounting evidence that it influenced the 2020 election. And again, we tend to focus on the presidency. What about members of Congress? What about members of the Senate? What about members of your state government, your local government, your county government? How many of the people that are currently acting as representatives of the people's power got there through a legitimate election, and how many were chosen out of a collectivist drive, a belief that the ends justify the means? How many? We'll never know. I'd love to say that that one day the truth will come out. We will never know. We will never know what policies have been put in place by people who are illegally in office. But when I see a Michigan election chief that sees the ballot trafficking allegations in 2,000 mules and calls them standard election practices, I have to wonder, can we trust of any election in America today? I mean, let's face it, paid ballot trafficking is illegal in all 50 states. So there's at least probable cause that in Michigan, they had evidence from Michigan that there were people stuffing ballot boxes. That's at least probable cause, because as I understand it, they were going between ballot boxes and we'll call them democratically controlled campaign offices, or I should say supported, not-for-profits that support democratic causes. Is there no question about whether or not they were paid? There's not proof that they've been paid, but don't you think it maybe warrants investigation? Is it standard election practice in Michigan for people to go around to multiple drop boxes and in each one putting in multiple ballots? You know, again, it's one thing to say, oh, you know what? I'm going to be nice. Let's say, I don't know the laws in Michigan. Let's say the laws in Michigan say you can drop off ballots for other people. You just can't be paid for it. So you go, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a nice guy. I'm going to go down to, say, the nursing home or the hospital, and I will collect all these ballots, and I will be nice, and I will drop them in the drop box for people because I want their votes to be recorded. And if that's not illegal in Michigan, fine. Why would I go to multiple drop boxes? Why would I spread it out? There's probable cause that of election fraud in Michigan, in her state. But Michigan's Secretary of State says, oh, no, this is standard election practice. Maybe it is. Maybe fraud is so standard in Michigan that this doesn't warrant looking at because that's the way they've always done it. Which makes you wonder about previous elections too, doesn't it? Now, some recent polling tends to lead to the idea that the majority of Americans do care about election integrity. Whether that be the abuse of drop boxes, the use of voter IDs, limiting mail-in and other types of voting, there's an interest in this. And I think the 2020 election kind of highlighted the need for this. But I have to ask you, if you're not concerned about voter integrity, and by voter integrity, I mean that everybody that can legally vote is allowed to vote with as few restrictions as possible, but is made as difficult as possible for people to cheat. See, I don't have a problem with mail-in ballots. I have a problem when they are sent out without being requested. Now, I've only used a mail-in ballot once in my life. I was out of town during an election. I submitted a request. I said, I'm going to be out of town. Would you please send me a mail-in ballot? They did. I filled out the ballot. I sent it back. I'm not wholeheartedly against mail-in ballots, but they should be asked for. You don't simply mail ballots to everybody on the rolls because there's more than enough evidence that those rolls are garbage. And if not garbage, certainly has a lot of garbage in it. I'm not against early voting. In fact, I kind of like early voting. See, my wife is in a wheelchair, and it's much easier for us to get in and vote when you're not dealing with a crowd. And early voting allows for better opportunities to vote without having to deal with a crowd. But I do have a problem with drop boxes. And I do have a problem with, I do have a trust issue with drop boxes and mail-in voting. Because the ballot is out of the control of both the voter and the election official during a significant period of time. I have no problem with voter ID as long as a person can get one for free. As long as you don't have to pay for it, I have zero problem with voter IDs because I want to make sure the person voting is the person, A, that's legally eligible to vote. And I also want to make sure that the person voting has only done it once. Now, if these things sound radical to you, maybe you should get your head out of Twitter for a while. Maybe you should look around and say, wait a second, do you realize that for most of this nation's history, you voted on one day in person on a paper ballot that was counted by hand? I remember in the 1970s as an elementary school child, it was late 60s, early 70s. I forget exactly which. We lived in New York City at the time, and I remember as a class, we were brought down to the cafeteria, which was a polling place. We were brought down early so that we could see how the voting machines worked. These are old mechanical machines, right? You pulled a lever and the curtain closed behind you, and you flip switches for who you were voting for. And when you pushed the lever the other way, all the switches went up and your votes were supposedly counted. But we were introduced to that because that was relatively new. Paper ballots, in-person voting only, and voting on a single day were the norm for 200 years. Maybe it wasn't such a bad idea. Maybe we should look at technology that makes voting easier and ask the question, does it make it easier to cheat? I don't want to make voting unnecessarily difficult, but voting is a responsibility. It's a duty. And it's something we should take seriously enough that it's worth a little bit of effort. It's worth going down to a polling place. It's worth a bit of inconvenience. Because that is how we hire our employees to represent us in government. And if you're not willing to put forth a little bit of effort to do this, I have to ask, do you really believe in a constitutional republic? Are you willing to let others choose for you who should be those representing you? And when you make that choice, how are you vetting the candidates? How are you deciding who to vote for? Is it the collectivist, I vote for this party? Is it the bribe of I vote for whoever promises me the most goodies? Or is it the idea you're going to vote for the person who has shown they will fulfill their oath to support the Constitution of the United States? Something that every oath of every elected official must include according to the Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution. See, if we are becoming a collectivist nation, it is because we, the people, have decided it is easier just to be collectivists than to actually do the work ourselves. At least that's what I've seen. That's the evidence I've seen. We're too lazy or too apathetic to actually do something for ourselves. We want someone else to do it for us. Just tell us who to vote for. That's not a free people. And what's really disturbing to me is how many people, young and old, are more than willing to give up their freedoms for the ease of being told how to live their lives, for the ease of having someone else decide for them what they can and cannot do, what they should and shouldn't put on their face, what injections they should and shouldn't take, who they should and shouldn't vote for, how we should live our lives. See, we claim to be the land of the free, but more and more, we're the land of the controlled. where we put our trust in collections, political parties, races, socioeconomic groups, rather than seeing each other as individuals. You know, I was asked the other day about the state of civility in America, and in large part, I believe it's because we've stopped seeing people as individuals. We identify them as groups. If you react differently to somebody simply because of the color of their skin, or their race, or what political party they appear to support, well, then you've become a collectivist. And I think if we take a close look at most Americans, if you take a close look at yourself and you ask yourself that question, do the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one? There are a lot of Americans who will say they do. There are a lot of Americans who are collectivists. Now, for those of you who may not recognize that, that comes from Star Trek II. It was a statement made by Spock. But the interesting thing is, Star Trek III is an entire movie about the needs of the one outweighing the needs of the many. The needs of Spock outweighing the needs of his friends and his crewmates. The willingness to sacrifice possibly their lives, certainly their futures, for the needs of the one is the ultimate sharing of the blessing of liberty.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a